You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Stand here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. George Fletchus. And Dr. Fletchus has been with us in the past, and we've talked about the problems with iodine, certainly suggesting iodorol, which is an iodine compound, which has had excellent results there in maintaining the stability of thyroids here. And people, many of our listeners, actually take iodorol. But tonight we're going to talk about something different. We're going to talk about the chronic fatigue syndrome. And of course, chronic fatigue is really a syndrome. In other words, it's a syndrome. There are lots of causes of chronic fatigue syndrome. Some of the people have Lyme disease. Some of them certainly want to go ahead and basically they have multiple chronic infections. And then, of course, there's another entity, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And it's a very, very strange entity. Most people are totally unaware of it, but there is a neurosurgeon back there in South Carolina who does treat these with amazingly good results. Because, of course, with chronic fatigue, no matter what you do, most people at least will continue having some problems. Now, not everybody who has this syndrome gets 100% cure, but a certain percentage of them do extremely well. Some are cured, some are dramatically improved, and, well, there are a few that are not improved at all, but certainly they're in a marked minority. And it's an amazing syndrome, which most people have never heard of. Dr. Fletchus, why don't you pick up the story and tell us about this amazing, amazing entity, which pretty is characterized, at least in part, by chronic fatigue. Go right ahead.
Thank you for having me. Many years ago, I started taking care of patients with fibromyalgia, and we noticed that in patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, that many of them complained of muscle aches and pain. Chronic fatigue syndrome, as you've mentioned, can be due to a chronic virus infection like Lyme, or which is a spirochete infection, or a virus like AIDS can cause the chronic fatigue and so on. Now, in this particular case, we were looking at patients with fibromyalgia, and we noticed that many of them were complaining of a similar type of problem. And we started getting it more in touch with the symptoms that they were talking about. Now, basically, what happens is that these patients were telling us about their muscle aches and pains, but they were also complaining of tingling and numbness of the extremities. Many of them would complain of burning pain in their extremities. Well, you know, from our training in medicine, we have seen that people who complain of burning sensation in the body, that the burning is usually due to a nerve that's being pinched. So we just sat there and said, well, you know, what nerve could be being pinched with this medical problem? So we sat down and started looking into this, and we found out that the patients had problems with their brains being very big with very small skulls. And we've seen a similar-like problem with the human teeth, where a child inherits its mother's small jaw and its daddy's big teeth.
Well, we usually see this at all associated with a spinal surgery where there was a contraction.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Fletcher is talking about this entity. It's not certainly very as common in America as it is over in the Orient, where you have very small people, and of course they have small bones, but some of these people have a very large brain, or a brain that's the size of somebody in this country, but they have a very small skull, and as a result of that, why, of course, there's a tendency, certainly a part of the tonsils of the cerebellum, to actually herniate down into the spinal column, and that, of course, shuts off the flow of the spinal fluid, and they get all sorts of headaches and all sorts of problems. And this is an entity, and basically it's like we used to see in orthopedic surgery or it's neurosurgery, where, of course, you dealing with the spinal column, which is what I dealt with, why there just wasn't enough room for the spinal column and or the nerves, and you had to decompress it. In other words, you actually had to take the bone off the back of the spinal column, and once they got the pressure off, why, the patients did fine. The numbness, the weakness that they were having went away. And, of course, you're having something very similar to that in these patients who actually do not have the base of their brain is not large enough. The skull at the base of the brain is not large enough to contain the skull. How frequently do you see something like this, Dr. Fletcher?
You know, there was an article published in the New England Journal of Medicine about 2 or 3 years ago, and they showed that out of 3,000 MRIs that were studied of the brain, they showed that about 1% of the population has got this problem with the the cerebellar tonsils inside the foramen magnum at the base of the brain. Now, what's interesting is that when you start putting pressure on the brainstem is where you have a lot of your sensory systems of the body. So in a patient with fibromyalgia, you'll see that the patient will, when you go take that person and you pat them, like you pat them on the shoulder or you pat them on the leg, to you and I, it's a normal pat. But to patients with this particular syndrome, they will look at you and say, "You just clapped me." And they have a hypersensitivity of the body to just plain touch. They have a hypersensitivity for light. They tend to try to dim down the lights around them because the light is, quote, too intense. Or they'll say, that radio is too loud. You need to cut it down. And it's a hypersensitivity of sound. But this is, normal fibromyalgia. The patient just complains of the muscle aches and pains. But when you start seeing the sensory systems of the body malfunctioning, then that makes you start thinking maybe there's something neurologically going on that needs to be accounted for.
And so basically the fibromyalgia, the chronic fatigue, are just symptoms they describe.
They're symptoms.
But basically there's a cause, very definite pathological cause behind this. And this is something that I was not aware of. I knew about the spinal stenosis in the back, but I never heard of this entity having to do with the base of the skull not being large enough. How long has this entity been recognized?
It's been known for probably 80, 90 years. And the other problem that we see with these patients is headaches. Now, it's one thing to have a headache that occurs maybe once or twice a week or even a month, but these patients have headaches that occur every day, and they can have plain headaches, or they can even have migraine headaches that occur every day. And when you see a headache that's occurring every day in the absence of a brain tumor or something, usually the headache is due to an anatomy problem. There is a defective anatomy that is present to account for why the headache is there, especially if the headaches are occurring right at the base of the skull on the backside.
Well, I don't think most doctors, though, recognize this. The one thing I think most doctors hate is when somebody comes in with a story that they get these terrible headaches. You check them over, you do the MRIs or CAT scans, and of course you don't find anything. And as a result of that, you just say, I take a couple of aspirin, a couple of Motrin, and come and see me in 6 months. And I think it's very frustrating for the doctor. I think it's very frustrating for the patient. But I don't think these entities are well recognized in the medical community, are they?
That's correct. And so basically, it's kind of like a disease like congestive heart failure. You don't make the diagnosis just based upon one thing. For congestive heart failure, you do a chest x-ray and you see a big heart. You see a lot of fluid accumulating in the lungs. You see edema of the legs and so on and so on. So it's a multitude of symptoms that would give you the picture that this may be a Chiari problem. Just to say that fibromyalgia is a problem of Chiari is not right.
Now, what you call this. You call it the Chiari syndrome. And, of course, Chiari, I guess, must have been a neurologist a long time ago, because there are a couple of entities named after him. But this is a very unique one where suddenly there just isn't enough room in the skull for the brain. Would that be a fair statement?
That's right. And so the brain, and because of that, the brain is trying to herniate out through the base of the skull. Now, what's interesting is that the location where the herniation is occurring is also the location where you have the autonomic nervous system. Now, the autonomic nervous system is the system that takes care of the body automatically. So, in this case, we can talk about you automatically make tears. You automatically make saliva. You automatically control your blood pressure, your heart rate, your bowels, your bladder function, et cetera, et cetera. And these patients will tell you about problems where the automatic nervous system is malfunctioning. So the patients will say, my eyes feel like there's sand in them, constantly dry, and I'm not making enough saliva. They will tell you about choking because they're having trouble with swallowing function. They about their when they go from laying down to standing up or from being to standing up, they all of a sudden feel lightheaded. It's a problem where the it's called orthostatic hypotension, but it's a problem where the blood pressure drops as you're standing up and so on, and basically the blood pressure should automatically adjust itself in whatever position you're in. These patients will have problems with a fast heart rate, a tachycardia, and so they'll be sitting there watching TV or just sitting there reading a book, and all of a sudden the heart goes from a heart rate of, let's say, 65 to a heart rate of 150, and it stays like that for a few minutes or even a few seconds, and then it calms right back. It's known as POTS syndrome, P-O-T-T-S. And POTS syndrome is this problem of the abnormal heartbeat. You have a disease known as irritable bowel syndrome. In this particular case, the bowels normally can regulate themselves, but these patients will tell you that one day I'm constipated, the next day I'm having diarrhea, and it doesn't seem like the bowels know what they're supposed to do. But the automatic nervous system takes care of the bowels, and these people, when that automatic nervous system is malfunctioning, will tell you about irritable bowel syndrome. They will complain about problems with their bladder. Normal people maybe urinate 5 to 6 times a day. These patients are urinating almost every hour on the hour, a day and night. Normally, you may be getting up maybe once per night to go to the bathroom. But these patients will tell you about going to the bathroom 3 and 4 times a night. And it's basically, again, a bladder that is losing its normal function because the nerves from this cord are being compressed up higher, right at the base where the brain, the spinal cord is developing right there at the base of the skull. So that's you will see this problem of dysautonomia. Now, also, the central nervous system, actually through the spinal cord, controls the blood supply to the hands and the feet. So these patients constantly will tell you, my hands and my feet are always cold, whether it be winter, spring, summer, or fall. I've got hands that are always cold. And they will complain about tingling and numbness of the extremities. And again, it's because the spinal cord is malfunctioning because of the compression that's occurring up higher inside the spinal cord right as it exits from the skull.
Well, none of these patients have any weakness of their arms or weakness of their legs.
They sure do. You'll see a problem of increased weakness, especially of the legs. Like when they try to go upstairs, if you walk behind these patients, you will notice that when they put their foot up to step onto the next rung of the stairs, that they tend to trip going up the stairs because they're bumping into their stair rather than putting their foot top of it.
Do they have increased reflexes, as you'd already see with people with the spinal cord pressure?
That's correct. You will see an increase in increased reflexes, abnormal reflexes. These people have trouble with vision, and they have problems with all sorts of neurological defects. And you sit there and say, how can one human being have so many medical problems?
Hold that thought. We're talking about Chiari syndrome, ladies and gentlemen. Chiari syndrome.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North America and continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it, taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
MRI of their brain. And when we looked at the films, we found out that 7 out of the 30 had Chiari malformations, and not one of those 7, the radiologist called it a Chiari malformation. So that tells you that it's something where you literally have to look at the films and determine what's going on, but just to depend upon a radiologist to come up with the answer is disappointing, because they were trained to find Chiari malformations, and yet out of out of 7 patients who definitely had it, not one of them, the radiologist, defined it as such.
Well, if you have a question or comment for our guest, why our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, this can manifest itself as chronic fatigue syndrome. It can manifest itself as fibromyalgia. But the patient certainly will have numbness and weakness of their arms and or legs, bladder malfunction, bowel malfunction. And it's all related, of course, to pressure on the brain and pressure on the cord from the fact that there just isn't enough room in the skull for the brain. And so basically then the tonsils, the little appendages, come off the cerebellum and they begin moving down adjacent to the spinal cord right at the very base of the head, the top of the spinal column there. And the patients get all sorts of symptoms and they go from doctor to doctor because they just can't figure out what it is. And it's something called Chiari syndrome. And most, I will have to admit that as a physician, I had never, well, I've heard of Chiari in relationship to other things, but this specific entity I had never heard of. Apparently it's quite frequent over in Japan and the Orient because the people are very, very small there and some of them have very large brains and there's just not enough room in the skull for it. How much more frequently is it, do you think, over there in the Orient than it is here in the United States? And do you think it's 1 in 100 of the fibromyalgias that has Chiari syndrome? What are your thoughts on it?
You know, what's interesting is that if you go to Japan, those people eat lots of iodine. And one of my patients who had fibrocystic breast disease, with taking iodine, her breast pain disappeared. But she looked at me one day and she said, you know what pain has also disappeared other than my breast pain? She said, it's my muscle pain. And that's when we discovered that iodine deficiency can also manifest as as fibromyalgia. That's interesting that if you go to a Japan where they are eating lots of iodine and you see somebody with fibromyalgia muscle pain, you better start thinking that this is actually a neurological disease rather than a iodine deficiency, because these people are already eating lots of iodine. And so to see one of them having this problem of muscle aches and pains, you have to start asking about pressure like headaches inside the head, problems with hypersensitivity of the senses, problems with the automatic nervous system malfunctioning, problems with the cold hands and cold feet. In fact, as you go around, in the community and you shake hands with people, you'll notice that some people's hands are like ice cubes. And you say, do you ever have problems with cold feet? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I've lived with cold feet, cold hands, and I can never seem to warm up. And those are the people that you start thinking, like, maybe this is a Chiari malformation because these people are always cold. They don't warm up like they should.
And, of course, what is the treatment for this entity?
The treatment is neurosurgery. You end up having to open up if there's a problem with a spinal canal that is too tight in the neck, these people will always complain of a tight neck. It just feels tight. They can never walk away from that tight neck, and it's a very painful situation. The problem with the headache, you need to open up the base of the skull on the backside. You remove some of the bone to make the opening bigger, and you have to cut off some of the cerebellar tonsils to give a bigger opening back there to get the pressure off the automatic nervous system of the spinal cord.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, Our guest is Sydney Dr. George Fletcher. He practices back in South Carolina, but of course he gets patients from a fairly large part of the country because, of course, he deals with these very strange conditions.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid that is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730. And ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, Dr. George Fletcher, practices in South Carolina. Our telephone number, if you're out across America, you have a question or comment for our guest, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And this is an entity that is really very, very poorly understood by the majority of physicians. Now, I practiced medicine for a good long while. I graduated from medical school 60 years ago, so I can look back over a long, long time, and I can remember when we always used to look at peptic ulcers, and of course they were related to stress. Well, eventually it turned out that a lot of these were related to chronic infections. You treated the infections, and the ulcers, which had plagued so many people for so many years, simply went away, and yet the average individual had no idea. The average doctor had no idea about these things. And so there are ideas that come out, certainly the idea of spinal stenosis, which is what I would have dealt with when I went to medical school. It wasn't even noted by the time I was practicing orthopedic surgery, while we were just beginning to understand spinal stenosis and learning how to decompress it and really transform the lives of so many people who were just chronic invalids before that. And of course, then the reconstructive procedures knee procedures, hip procedures, arthroscopic surgery. All of these exciting things came along with the changes in our knowledge. But, of course, certainly this idea, of course, I didn't deal with neurological problems or chronic fatigue, but it really was only just a few months ago when we talked to Dr. Fletcher about this entity, and then I began to read up on it. And there's a fair amount, actually, in the literature. You can actually read about this entity if you're a physician or you want to read up on it. Where would you suggest that people go to get more information, Dr. Fletcher?
We have some papers that we can send to anyone who's interested. They can just call up or they can actually just log on to my website. It's fftlab.org.
Give that one more time, please.
The website is called FFTLab.
FFTLab, okay.
Yeah, FFTLab.org. And they can send me an email, and I'll be happy to send them a copy of the signs and symptoms of a spinal cord compression. But let me just give you an idea about what these people complain about. 90% of them complain of headache. 90% complain of fatigue. You know, you and I were trained that fatigue was due to metabolism disorders. But just the fact that you compress the spinal cord right at the very top can be a source of why the body experiences fatigue. We've seen patients who have come in who were blind in one eye and the other eye was just fine. And when
they took
the surgery and decompressed took the pressure of the cerebellar tonsils and opened up the base of the skull, all of a sudden these people had vision in their other eye. We've seen 81% of the patients complain of tingling in the extremities. They have general imbalance, clumsiness, increasing loss of memory, restricted body movement, intolerance to bright light, vertigo, especially with position change. They have difficulty walking on uneven ground. They experience problems with difficulty negotiating steps, a pressure feeling in the neck. You saw that with the C-spine stenosis problem. These patients also will complain of loss of sexual interest and sensation. They have problems with a fluid-like feeling sound in their ears. The thing that's unique here, in which part of the art of medicine is lost in, is the fact that these patients will complain of intense burning in the extremity. And, you know, what we've lost in the art of medicine is that when somebody comes in and tells you, my tissues are burning, my hands are burning, my arms are burning, the fact that something is burning should tell you that a nerve is being pinched somewhere in the body. And it doesn't mean that it's just a peripheral nerve. It could be the spinal cord itself.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in this across America, you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. George Fletcher, and we're talking about Chiari's syndrome, and of course, having to do with the base of the skull. And we have Dave calling from Central New York. Dave, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. I've got a number of things that I heard one doctor say it might be something to do with the lower back, but I have restless leg syndrome and muscle cramps in my calves. If I stand up, move my toes up, that really hurts in the back of my legs. Right now I'm in a room 75 degrees with double long underwear on, and I'm cold. And I take a lot of vitamins. And of course, I've lost 2 inches. I'm age 71. I've lost 2 inches. And so I don't know if it's the lower spine. I wonder if the doctor has any answers.
Do you have any thoughts at all? I realize, of course, you can't make a diagnosis over the telephone,
right.
But do you have any thoughts at all from what he's talking about? Basically, it would sound that most of his symptoms seem to be in the low back and the legs.
Yeah, you again have to wonder about a possible herniated disc of the lower back, or you can even have a herniated disc in the upper spine, like in the neck, and have the exact same symptoms you're having now. In restless leg syndrome, we've seen that as being a problem with iron deficiency, where people don't get enough iron. And when we see a lot of cramps, especially in people getting up there in years, part of the problem is the lack of a hormone called DHEA. You can buy it through any health food store, and if you take DHEA with magnesium, that helps to ease off the cramps very, very nicely.
And I think it's really so important that people understand that most people, about 80% of the people, do not have sufficient magnesium levels, and you really need to be taking certainly magnesium supplements, and certainly if you're taking calcium at all, you should really be taking magnesium with it. Certainly, you don't want it to be taking calcium with under any circumstance without magnesium.
Actually, what we have discovered is that in the population at large, we're taking too much calcium, not enough magnesium, and it should be the reverse. Like, let's say you're eating 500 milligrams of calcium a day, you need somewhere like 800 or 1,000 milligrams of magnesium, because the magnesium is better for, like what you saw here, this problem with cramp, and magnesium is also crucial toward normal heart function.
And it's also essential as far as it regulates your bowels very much. And certainly, it has to do certainly with the way your brain works as well. Magnesium
is
one of the most important things we have. And certainly, Dave calling, you certainly ought to be checked from those sort of things. Have you been to a doctor at all who delves into alternative medicines? Certainly, most people just give you a calcium tablet. That might be the worst thing in the world you can get for your restless legs and leg cramps.
Yep.
I haven't been taking calcium. No, I haven't been to a doctor. And I was wondering if someone said that there might be a heart insufficiency of the heart pumping blood or something, something to do with a heart ejection factor.
Dave, the first thing you need to do is go to a good doctor and get checked over and make sure that there's nothing there that certainly there's nothing in the way of a tumor or metabolic. You really need to have blood tests. You need to have a complete workup to begin with. And
That's
then, of
true.
Course, you can think of these alternative things. What would you say to that, Dr. Oblesis?
I would agree.
Okay, but basically, don't discount medicine. Medicine is a wonderful profession. It really is, and they can do amazing things. But you want to make sure there's nothing there that's very, very obvious. And then you can begin thinking of these alternative treatments, okay?
Well, Dr. Stan, are you taking any new patients? I can fly out there.
No way. I've been retired from medicine for 20 years. But Dr. Fletcher says you could fly down to South Carolina.
Yeah, actually, my office is just about 20 miles south of Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay,
right on the border, right on the border with South Carolina.
Okay, fine. Well, your area code is certainly
My home is down here in South Carolina.
Okay, fine. Or up here in South Carolina, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, anything else, Dave, before we let you go?
No, sir. Thank you.
God bless.
Thank
okay.
You very much.
You're welcome. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly, so many people have these chronic problems. And we're talking about certainly several million people have chronic fatigue, and probably another couple of million have this fibromyalgia.
You know, what's interesting is chronic fatigue syndrome. There's maybe 2 million, maybe 3 million people with that. But fibromyalgia, there's more like 40 million people nationwide that have that problem. And so the issue is how to work up a patient who comes in with muscle aches and pains and try to differentiate, is this an iodine deficiency? Is this due to a chronic virus infection? Is it due to a problem with the spinal cord, where the spinal cord is being pinched?
And so there are a number of things that just have to be thoroughly evaluated. It's amazing how many people really are low on iodine as well.
Yeah.
And because they're really in so many of the basic minerals, most people are not taking adequate amounts of vitamins, certainly, because we're indoors so much of the time. Most people certainly are vitamin D deficient.
I would agree with that, yeah.
So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, but this idea of Chiari syndrome, and that there are a significant number of people who actually have this problem where their brain's too large for the capacity of their skull, and of course they just have to decompress this. Now, are they decompressing the base of the skull over there in the Orient, there in Japan and China?
They have been, yeah. They make the opening to the skull on the backside a little bit bigger. And within the last 25 years, there's been some medical articles showing that just because you make the opening bigger doesn't mean you're going to get rid of the problem. And we discovered that to be true. And so now we not only open up the base of the skull, that is, make the hole a little bit bigger, but we also go in there and cut off some of the tonsils of the cerebellum. Now, it's interesting. The tonsils of the cerebellum is like your appendix. That is, it's remnant tissue. It doesn't serve a useful purpose, and you can get rid of it and not be missing anything. Well, the cerebellar tonsils are built the same way. They're remnant tissue. The body can, you can get rid of these tonsils, and the body will never miss that type of, you know, miss the tissue. And in fact, we've had patients who have been shot in the cerebellum in the back of the skull. They've been shot and they lost 67% of their cerebellum and still had normal function. So there's a lot of redundancy in brain tissue, and the brain can try to put itself back together again even after major injury like a gunshot to the back.
Well, how many, what percentage of the neurosurgeons do you think recognize this entity and are willing to do surgery on it? I know there really seems to me, I started reading about this after you had mentioned it, and it seems like most neurosurgeons do not recognize this, but there's a small group of neurosurgeons here in the United States that do recognize this entity and will actually tackle it. And
many neurosurgeons we'll not do any surgery on this. Like if you came in and said, look, I'm having headaches and it turns out to be a Chiari malformation, most neurosurgeons would say, you know, we have narcotics and painkillers. So, but neurosurgeons will do surgery if you lose function. That is, if you are, if your hand stops working or your leg stops working or your bladder starts malfunctioning and not working. When there's a major loss of neurological function, then the neurosurgeons are willing to step up to the plate. But most of them won't touch it if you're just coming in saying, I have a lot of headaches, can you take out my Chiari? They're not going to touch it. So basically, it's one of those type of situations where we have to slowly, you know, pick and choose the patients that as to who's going to go to surgery and what happens.
Well, now, most of the people, certainly who have fibromyalgia, have associated chronic fatigue. Can you separate these two entities, or do they more or less overlap?
It looks like chronic fatigue syndrome, secondary to a virus infection. That chronic fatigue syndrome will have a subset patients who have fibromyalgia muscle pain. But that doesn't say that it goes the opposite. I'm going to give you an illustration. A patient with fibromyalgia, when they get pregnant, their fibromyalgia gets worse. Versus a patient with chronic fatigue syndrome, when they get pregnant, they actually get better. And it kind of pregnancy helps to break these two apart as far as what the problem is. Chronic fatigue syndrome, I think about 80% of the patients who complain of that will tell you that there was a virus, they came down with some type of infection, and their fatigue set up soon thereafter. I have one patient in the practice who loved to take care of wild birds. And it turns out that she got from these wild birds a problem with West Nile virus that can live in your body for years. And so she complains of fatigue and, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome. And it all started when she came down with meningitis for West Nile virus.
Well, what can you do for West Nile virus? Or what can you do for some of the, certainly Lyme disease, if it's just straight Lyme disease, you can treat that.
Well, with Lyme disease, you can give antibiotics. But with West Nile virus, that's a virus infection, and there's not much you can do for those people.
Well, actually building up the level of the immune system helps, certainly. We know that lots of people have chronic viruses, most people carry the chickenpox virus, but as long as their immune system is
That's
intact,
correct.
Well, they do fine. It's only when their immune system begins to break down, especially as they get older, they come down with shingles. So basically, can we help some of these chronic viral infections by boosting the immune system?
Something that we do, and a lot of times they will get better, but there's sometimes when the fatigue is due to a problem with a decrease in hormones.
Okay, we're going to have to hold that thought right there. We're just about out of time. Hang on, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, George, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up tonight's program. You go right ahead.
Thank you. Well, what we have seen is that it's one thing for a patient to come in complaining of muscle aches and pain, but it's another thing when they start telling you about problems with headaches. I've had a patient who came in recently, and she was having the muscle aches and pains and the fatigue and so on, but she then started telling me that she was seeing double vision. And her eyeballs were starting to not function normally. And she would look at her computer screen and she'd see two screens rather than one. And this girl started having migraine headaches that were developing every day. She was having problems with vomiting on a daily basis from the migraine headaches. And I told her, I said, you know, this is not normal. This, you know, to be having this much problem, and especially with the problems with the the double vision. And so we had her evaluated, and sure enough, she had a Chiari malformation, and she went to surgery, and within a week her double vision was gone. Her stability on her feet was much better. She could stand for 15-20 minutes without having to sit down. Before that, she'd stand for 2 or 3 minutes, and she'd have to be sitting down because her legs were getting weak. So it's the type of thing that it's one thing to make the diagnosis of fibromyalgia, but you start having to look for reasons why the fibromyalgia exists. And one of the reasons is to look for a spinal cord compression. And patients with this problem will tell you of a lot of headaches at the base of the skull on the backside. And when you start seeing that, and then you shake hands with them and you find out that their hands are cold and they're having tingling and numbness and they're having problems with choking and dry mouth and so on, you need to start thinking maybe this fibromyalgia that we're looking at is of neurological origin. And that's the thing that we need to take a look at when we look at fibromyalgia. I know that if you watch the TV commercials, they say, oh, fibromyalgia, all that is just overactive nerves, and you just take this drug for your overactive nerves, and it'll get rid of the problem.
Well, we're going to have to let you go. We're out of time. God bless, and thanks very much. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just wanted you to hear what Dr. Fletcher has to say. And he's a fascinating individual who certainly deals with a lot of these very difficult conditions. And basically, we have several million people chronic fatigue. We have millions more with fibromyalgia. And the doctors just don't know what to do with them. Some of these, of course, is Lyme disease. And Lyme, of course, was introduced from the biological laboratory there at Plum Island, right across from Lyme, Connecticut. It is a genetically created disease, ladies and gentlemen. And so many of the diseases plaguing us today come from that point of view. There is, in fact, if you want to get in the background of where the AIDS epidemic came from, you should get the book by Dr. Gary Glum called, it's Full Disclosure. And basically, somebody, one of the people worked on the disease, created this disease so it would target blacks primarily. I'm talking about AIDS. Basically, of course, was dying of cancer, and he went to Dr. Glum, and he told him the story, and Dr. Glum wrote the book Full Disclosure. Of course, they came after Dr. Glum for doing that. The books will cost you $80 to $100. You can get them up on Amazon, used copies. This is what we're really up against today. Well, this is a fascinating entity, as are so many of them. And basically, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get some of the books we have that deal with the health, certainly Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Will Save Your Life, that can save your life, are important. Natural strategies for cancer patients. And basically, of course, if you take the proper vitamins and minerals along with your chemotherapy, why, of course, you're not going to get anywhere near as ill. But there are alternative treatments for cancer. We actually have, certainly, my talk on Agenda 21. The covert plan. My talk on population control, the covert agenda. Our 4 tape sets on cancer and the alternative treatments for cancer that are being actively suppressed. And people say, why would anybody actively suppress treatments for cancer? And it's very, very simple. There are too many people in the world, and there really are people out there who are doing everything they can to block the introduction of effective cancer treatments. And if you haven't read the book, A World Without Cancer, by our good friend Ed Griffin, A World Without Cancer, we have a 4 tape set on Laetril. And, of course, I personally talked to the number one man in the National Cancer Institute. His name was Dean Burke. He'd been the National Cancer Institute for 26 years, division of NIH. And he told me, he said, sure, Laetril works. It works better than the chemotherapy, and I'm in charge of chemotherapy research. And I said, what about the studies at Sloan Kettering that said Laetril didn't work? And he said, well, they were specifically designed to show it didn't work because they don't want an effective treatment. That was Dr. Dean Burke. You can look him up on the Internet. A fascinating doctor, willing to speak out. Of course, he's long since dead, as are most of the doctors who've really had the courage to come forward. Who in their right mind would want to limit access to information that can save human lives? You need to hear my talk, Population Control, the Covert Agenda, and my talk on Agenda 21, the Covert Plan. They're both available. As all the other things we mentioned, by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You really need to look into alternative health products, and if you'd like to get the list of the products we carry, many of which Barbara and I personally take, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, but we certainly take magnesium regularly and selenium. I take prostate support, and we have immune support. Basically, of course, we recommend people have antibiotic on hand. It's a collection of oil of oregano, garlic, and oil of elderberry. And when you start coming down with a cold, while you take vitamin D3 and that on a regular basis, and you can pretty well bring these things under control because they boost your immune system. If you'd like the list of the various health products that we carry here at Radio Liberty, we've investigated, we carry them because they're important. Our number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war. America, our health is under attack today. If that sounds incredible, get the book, Health and Nutrition Secrets, that can save your life. Oh, a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices,
guide her, man, guide her through the night with a light from above.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here for the second hour of Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest at this hour every week is William Grigg. And, of course, William was formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He's worked for other magazines, and he's a prolific writer. He's written a number of books. Basically, of course, he, at the current time, writes regularly programs and articles. He is certainly a frequent guest at Lou Rockwell. And, of course, he writes the Radio Liberty monthly newsletter and takes some of the stress off of me. And it really is a big help to me, and I always enjoy talking to William here every Friday, because he certainly gives an excellent analysis of what's really going on in our country. I think that certainly William is one of the most astute observers we have and most articulate spokesmen for the conservative cause, and certainly we support him and his family, and we hope that some of you out there in the listening audience may want to help him as well, because certainly William has an excellent grasp of what's going on today. You see, nothing is it appears to be. Basically, we have a small group of very wicked people who want to bring about a world government. That's what their real goal is. They have no loyalty to America, but they're using the financial and military power of the United States to install a world government. They're replacing corrupt governments throughout the world with other occult governments which they control. And basically, we see this, you can see this all throughout the Near East taking place, as we were actively involved in the toppling of the government of Mubarak in Egypt, the toppling of the government in Tunisia, the toppling of the Gaddafi's government in Libya. We are intimately involved with the civil war that's taking place in Syria today. We have our special forces troops stationed in both Jordan and in Turkey, and they are training and arming and financing the rebels. This is not a civil war. You must understand what is going on in Syria today is not a civil war. The people who are fighting the terrorists, the opponents, are certainly not Syrians. Very few of them are Syrians. Most of them are coming from Libya. They're coming from Tunisia. Or they're coming from Greece. Or many of them are connected with Al-Qaeda. And of course, basically, we have financed Al-Qaeda. We're financing Al-Qaeda fighters in Syria. We finance the Al-Qaeda fighters in Serbia and in Kosovo and in Chechnya. And now, of course, we're fighting the Al-Qaeda fighters up there in Afghanistan, all 50 of them. Ladies and gentlemen, there are only 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and we have and we're funding almost 500,000 people up there, 60,000 American troops, 40,000 NATO troops, 100,000 paid contractors, 300,000 man army and police force in Afghanistan. And we're funding this whole thing because there are 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Ladies and gentlemen, if that sounds ridiculous, you go up to your search engine and type in Afghanistan 50 members of Al-Qaeda, or Afghanistan 50 members of Al-Qaeda, Steve Croft, 60 Minutes. You'll find that what I'm telling you is true. But these are the things that you will never hear discussed in the controlled media, because the media in America is controlled. And with that, let's go to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are we doing tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
It's always a pleasure. And what are we going to be talking about tonight?
I think we have to talk about the fact that this is the year that the collectivist left in this country turns feral. This is the year that they bare their fangs and they dispense with any pretense that they're interested in sowing tolerance and amity and pursuing some kind of coexistence on the basis of mutual respect. This year they pretty much display their unalloyed, untempered desire for total power over those of us who do not subscribe to their ideology. And I think that that's something that is going to make 2013 perhaps a uniquely unpleasant year in American history.
Well, I think it's very interesting that when the recent the crisis there in Congress was certainly Basically, it came to an end. President Obama said, well, we've saved the middle class. And we've saved the middle class. Ladies and gentlemen, your taxes are going up. That's what it's all about. Your taxes on almost every American are going to go up as a direct result of this confrontation that was recently settled. Well, William, you go right ahead.
He said, Mr. Obama, that they had intended to spare everybody but what they call the rich from tax increases. And we find out the taxes are going to go up for everybody, all households that have an income of, what is it, $30,000 or more? By no means would anybody, individual or a family, with an aggregate household income every year of $30,000 be considered even middle class. But we're seeing, of course, the ineluctable consequences of the system we've been living under for many decades, the fact that we've reached that terminal point. We reached, if you will, a terminal velocity in our genuine departure over the fiscal cliff. We actually went over the fiscal cliff a number of decades ago. I contend that the government effectively defaulted on its debts in August of 1971 when Nixon sundered the last connections between the dollar and gold because the foreign creditors could no longer have their loans repaid to them, the debts still be owed them repaid in gold. So that was effectively the bankruptcy of the United States. We've been living with the protracted consequences of that. And we've reached a point now where the economy is at terminal velocity. We've been falling. We don't know when we're going to collapse, when we're going to collide, rather, with the canyon floor. But that's going to happen. And we hear that Mr. Geithner is leaving by the end of next month. Mr. Geithner, of course, is the most recent emissary of the banking cartel to hold the office of Treasury Secretary. And we know that Ben Bernanke has indicated he's not going to seek another term. Mr. Bernanke is probably the most consequential public figure in the world. There's a leak recently from the so-called Federal Open Market Committee at the Federal Reserve where it's pretty clear that this Politburo-type body that is in charge of the monetary system is somewhat riven with a schism, disagreements here as to whether they're going to continue the direct purchase of treasury bonds, which is, of course, monetizing the debt. That's the only tool that they have is the creation of what they call money. And in concept, they could allow this system, this process to play out as far as it's played out in Zimbabwe. The only thing that limits what the Federal Reserve can do in terms of monetary creation is the number of zeros that they can conjure out of the ether. But at some point, the value of the currency will collapse. People will simply not continue to take it. And so there's some ambiguity now as to what they're going to do. And they're really, for all their pretensions of omnipotence, there's really not a whole lot they can do in order to maintain the pretense much longer. So that's one thing that has to be taken into account, is the fact that we're dealing with sort of a systemic seizure.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William Greig. And William is simply saying that we've really certainly went over the cliff, the financial cliff, certainly on the 15th of August, 1971, when they cut the relationship between the American dollar and gold. We were told our currency was backed by gold. It stipulated this in our laws, but that doesn't matter. The people who control our government, the people of great wealth, don't believe in the laws, and certainly if you get in their way, they will trample on you, they will destroy you, or they will have you killed. And I'm not hesitating to say that there are all sorts of people dying strange deaths. A number of the people I've interviewed have actually died very strange deaths. And why I'm still here, I really don't know. I hope that maybe I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and that God is protecting myself and my family. But basically, of course, we have a very real problem because, of course, we have nothing behind our currency. And, of course, Federal Reserve is actually creating $85 billion every single month and buying up mortgages and treasury bonds. 46 cents out of every dollar the treasury spends has to be borrowed. And where do they get it? Why, most of it's coming from the Federal Reserve system, either directly or simply the Federal Reserve's giving money to other central banks and they're buying our bonds. But it's all made with artificial money. And eventually, of course, you begin having tremendous amounts amounts of money in circulation. And, of course, once it begins, the velocity begins to increase, then you begin to get runaway inflation. Right now, inflation is running 7 to 10%, according to John Williams, who doesn't work for the government, who can tell you the truth. And if you haven't gone to his website, shadowstats.com, you need to. But America is certainly going to have some serious financial problems in the coming months and years. Go right ahead, William.
That's one dimension of what's going on right now, and it's the most important dimension, I contend, because that has to do with the ability of people to maintain their physical existence, the fact that the economy is so deeply distressed, and the fact that our distress continues to deepen and worsen is of, I think, preemptive importance. But another element of this, of course, that we have to discuss not only is the destruction of our currency, but the accelerating campaign to disarm us and leave us helpless in the face of those who presume to rule us, meaning, of course, what's commonly called gun control. And what we're discussing is not gun control. We're discussing civilian disarmament. This is something that the Obama administration has been pursuing in a very low-key way since Mr. Obama was inaugurated in 2009. There's no reason to believe that his convictions have changed dramatically on the subject, although in the case of Joe Biden, you have somebody who made noises about believing in the right to keep and bear arms. He's somebody who's just as committed, and he's been appointed now to head this storefront Potemkin committee, this commission that's going to ratify most likely some version of an existing framework for civilian disarmament that would be broadly compatible with the UN's Small Arms Treaty, which is something that Mr. Obama indicated he'd be willing to sign after the election.
But you know what's really so interesting is that the Obama administration really believes, of course, that small arms and weapons are, we should not have them, the public should not have them. Then why has the government bought $1.6 billion worth of ammunition? A lot of it is, of course, hollow point ammunition. You can't use that militarily. It is against all international laws because it is so tears up and destroys tissue. The Obama administration has bought 1.6 billion rounds, I should say, 1.6 billion rounds of hollow point, predominantly hollow point ammunition, and they just recently bought another two or three hundred million rounds this last week. Why are they doing that if guns are totally unimportant? And what we want to do is have everybody disarmed. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, one reason we want to have the right to keep and bear arms is if America was ever invaded, we want to have a force here that would defend it. That is the rationale, one major reason. Other countries have never tried to invade America because our people were so well-armed, and during the Second World War, neither the Japanese nor the Germans would even consider an invasion of America because of a well-armed population. And then, of course, we need people armed so that they can protect themselves. If a woman is going to be raped, she has two choices. She can either lay there, but if she's got a gun, she can defend herself. If you have children in a school and somebody comes in intent upon killing them, if there's somebody in that school who has a weapon, they can defend them. And that's why, of course, so many children were killed back there in Connecticut at Sandy Hook School, because nobody was allowed to have a gun. And when you take away the right of the people to have guns, you take away the right to defend children. If you care about children, then you want somebody in our schools today who can defend them, and you're going to have to defend them with a gun. It doesn't do any good to put in a call 911. By then, dozens of children can be dead. Go right ahead, William.
That's what always happens, of course, in situations like this, is that you don't have adequate time for people to respond from the police department, and SWAT team drills, lockdown drills, the sort that they were having at St. Louis Elementary in the weeks before the shooting, always assume that there will be a timely intervention on the part of a SWAT team. It never happens that way, because in active shooter situations like this, the shooter's got the initiative, and he ends the conflict on his own terms. And that was the case at Columbine. That's the case at pretty much every instance where you've had a shooter of this sort, an incident where a shooter has attacked a captive population inside of a gun-free zone. Of course, a gun-free zone is a selectively gun-free zone. It selects for disarming the potential victims and empowering the assailant. But what's happening right now, of course, is that the Obama administration with utterly cynical, opportunistic guile and typical dishonesty is moving to capitalize on this by trying to advance the disarmament of law-abiding. And Mr. Biden has promised Mayor Thomas Menino of Boston, who's the co-chair of a group called Mayors Against Illegal Guns, he's the co-chair with New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, that the Obama administration, by the end of this month, is going to have some kind of a legislative package on the civilian disarmament.
But Bloomberg is totally dedicated to the disarmament of the American people. It sounds like everybody on this commission, this so-called independent commission, is dedicated to the disarmament of the American people and the destruction, certainly, of the Second Amendment. Basically, Joe Biden is sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States. He is a traitor and a subversive, and basically, he is not fit to head that commission. And it sounds to me like most of the people on the commission should not be there because they're all committed to disarming the American people and making this nation vulnerable not only to invasion, but to chaos and an establishment of a dictatorship. And that is the true goal of people like Dianne Feinstein and Barack Obama and Joe Biden and certainly Mayor Bloomberg. They want to disarm the American people and make us all subservient to the ruling elite. Go right ahead.
And they're not particularly diffident in expressing that point of view anymore. That's why I say that there's a certain brazenness about what is being said now by the collectivist left that we hadn't seen before. There's this sense, for instance, if you watch, and I wouldn't recommend this, if you watch MSNBC, which is to the Democratic Party what Fox News is to the Republican Party, and disguised unabashed heraldic chorus that is hymning the virtues of the dear leader. If you watch MSNBC, it's quite a bit like watching one party or watching official state-run propaganda channels in a one-party dictatorship, because at every commercial break, there's this triumphalist narration about all these wonderful things that have happened because Mr. Obama was reelected. And it's all punctuated with the motto or the rallying cry forward. I mean, that they don't even disguise the fact now that they are an affiliate, they're an adjunct to the Obama administration, they're an adjunct to the White House. They're, if anything, a little bit more impudent about it than Fox News was during the Bush administration. But they're all talking about the idea that the losers in the last election, which are supposedly the embodiment of the old America, have no choice but to submit. They're the who rather than the whom in the Leninist equation. Lenin, of course, said the question in politics is who does what to whom. It's not what is done or whether what is done is just. The question is who does what to whom. If you're the who, then you're the ones who inflict your will upon the whom. And for the Obama administration and its camp followers right now, they're the who rather than the whom. That means the whom simply has to submit to whatever the who sees fit to inflict upon them. And when you're talking about that type of triumphalist collectivism, coupled with the demand that people be disarmed, you're dealing here with a dynamic that leads in the direction of really horrible conflict. And if that conflict is resolved in favor of those in power, you're talking about the sort of thing that leads to pogroms and mass detention and worse. That's the sort of thing that has happened in American history, albeit not to most of the people we read about in American history. We don't read American history from the eyes of those who were the whom rather than the who. We don't read about how the Plains Indians were treated after they were disarmed, how they simply had to submit to the will of the stronger. You read the rhetoric of the people who were in the Department of Interior after the war between the states and after the Plains Indians were expropriated from their lands. You get some similar flavor to what the left is saying today, where at one point, if I remember correctly, Sitting Bull was being lectured to by, I believe it was Senator Logan from Massachusetts. Don't hold me to that. I think it was Senator Logan, who said, you're no longer a great chief of your people. Everything you have was given to you by the government. The clothes that you wear, the food that you eat, the available living space, this is all a gift of the government. You have no standing before us as an individual we have to respect. That means that you have no rights. You get what we say that you get, no more. And they have been disarmed and left helpless. Well, that's pretty much how the left looks at the rest of us. They look at us the way that the triumphalist elements of the corporate combine in the 19th century looked at the Plains Indians. And That's the sort of thing that led to horrible things being done to the Plains Indians. And all that had to do with the fact that they were left disarmed and helpless, as the left wants us to be now.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is not imaginary. All you need to do is watch television. And day after day after day after day, they keep going over the tragedy that took place at Sandy Hook School. But they never talk about, certainly in instances where somebody had a gun, they were able to prevent massacres. They never mentioned that. William, you go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, if I could be indulged in doing so, I want to read a remarkably repellent column that was written by Donald Kaul, K-A-U-L. He is a retired and now unretired liberal columnist. He wrote a syndicated column for a number of decades. He's one of the more abashed proponents of classic centralized government, high church liberalism. And this is what he had to say in his most recent column that I think captures the flavor of what I'm talking about. He begins by saying, I'm glad I retired 5 months ago. Think of it, I was spared writing about the presidential election, an event so vacuous it made reality TV seem interesting. If there was any serious discussion of an important national issue, global warming, obesity, transportation policy, the morality of drone attacks on civilian populations, the environmental consequences of fracking, existential implications of the designated hitter, there, of course, he's being a little bit whimsical, I missed it. And then he goes on to complain about the tenor of the most recent presidential election. And he says, but then Newtown happened. A misanthropic young man who never seemed particularly violent killed his mother and then broke into an elementary school and massacred little kids, teachers, and the principal. And the very air changed. The holiday season suddenly turned somber. You looked at the small children around you differently as fragile, precious gifts to be cherished and above all protected. Protected. Okay, let me interject here. He's playing the ad misericordiam card. That's, of course, a logical fallacy, the appeal to pity. And every time a collectivist starts invoking the children, he's going to demand that you surrender your right to the government in the supposed name of protecting the children, on the assumption, I guess, that children belong to society and to the state rather than being the unique responsibility of the parents to whom they were born or who adopted them. To continue, Obama struck that note in his moving speech at the memorial service, speaking for us all. Once again, I interject, he didn't speak for me. There is no us to which I belong that would include Mr. Obama and his regime. But Mr. Kaul said, speaking for us all, he said, we can't tolerate this anymore. These tragedies must end, and to end them, we must change. Nice words, but somehow not enough, not nearly enough. That's when I figured I should write a column about it. During my 50-year career, every time some demented soul would take a semi-automatic gun and clean out a post office, a school, or a picnic, I'd get up on my soapbox, let loose with a withering diatribe about guns, the National Rifle Association, and weak kneed politicians. Did it about 75 times, give or take. And in every case, the main effect was a spike in gun sales, which, of course, is what's going on right now, incidentally. Still, I thought I'd give one more shot or chance. Obama's speech was fine as far as it went, but it didn't go very far. Neither have any of the other responses I've heard. California Senator Dianne Feinstein said she was going to introduce a bill to ban the sale and importation of assault weapons. Great, but the bill wouldn't apply to weapons already out there, and in defining illegal weapons, it listed more than 900 exceptions. 900. The thing missing from this debate so far is anger. Anger that we live in a society where something like the Sandy Hook Elementary massacre can happen, and our main concern is not offending the NRA sensibility. That's obscene. Here, then, is my madder than hell, and I'm not going to take any more program for ending gun violence in America. Okay, what proceeds here in the column, what Mr. Kaul says, I think represents, if you will, sort of the creature from the id of the collectivist left. Now, let's see. Get rid of the Second Amendment, he says. It's not about guns anyway, and it's more trouble than it's worth. And then he says it doesn't deal with gun ownership. We don't have a militia now in the sense that we had in the 18th century, and surely the founders couldn't have imagined that civilians would have access like guns used in the Newtown shooting when they guaranteed gun rights. Owning a gun should be a privilege, not a right. Declare the NRA a terrorist organization.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is simply reading an article by one of those dedicated leftists who tries to play on our emotions. Oh, we've got to protect the children. We've got to protect the children. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have to protect the children. We live in a violent society, and you protect the children by having somebody there with a gun to shoot the people who are trying to injure the children. Well, they banned guns over in England recently. They banned guns. Why? Of course, the incidence of gun crime has doubled and the incidence of violent crimes has skyrocketed in England since they banned guns over there and people have no defenses at all. And England today is the most violent nation in all of the European Union. But, of course, nobody wants to talk about that. Oh, if we just took the guns away from the law-abiding citizens, well, let's go ahead and do that. Let's take away the guns from all the guards that they have there at the White House, and certainly take the guards out of the school where Michelle Obama's children go, because after all, we banned guns, there would be no violence. Well, of course, everybody knows that's foolish. Well, certainly there'd be somebody who'd want to go in and harm those children, people who don't like Barack Obama. Well, why would there be violence? You know, we've outlawed guns. Because you can't change human nature. And basically what you need is somebody with a gun to protect the children. Go right ahead with him.
Proceeding here with this column by Donald Cowell, which, of course, is replete with exactly the kind of foolishness you're referring to, Dr. Stan. He says the following. We should, in his words, declare the NRA a terrorist organization and make membership illegal. Hey, we did it to the Communist Party, and the NRA has led to the deaths of more of us than American commies ever did. By the way, the U.S. Membership in the American Communist Party, the Communist Party USA, was never made illegal. It was never illegal to be a member of the Communist Party, or the Nazi Party, or the Democrat Party, or the Republican Party. It was never a crime to be a communist. It was never a crime to promote communism, to advocate for communism. Communism, of course, is abhorrent, it is evil, it is diabolical, it is murderous, but it was never a crime to espouse communism or to belong to the Communist Party. But Mr. Call wants to criminalize membership in the NRA, which is a group, by the way, for which I don't have an abundance of respect. I think that many of the people who join the NRA do out of loyalty to the idea of gun ownership rather than loyalty to the organization, which I think is horribly misled and horribly mismanaged. But the point is that Mr. Call starts with the premise that if you belong to this legal, peaceful, law-abiding organization, that you should be designated a terrorist. He said, I would also raise, that is to say, burn to the ground, the organization's headquarters, clear the rubble, and salt the earth, but that's optional. Make ownership of unlicensed assault rifles a felony. If some people refuse to give up their guns, then that prying the guns from their cold, dead hands thing works for me. Then I would tie Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, our esteemed Republican leaders, to the back of a Chevy pickup truck and drag them around a parking lot until they saw the light on gun control.
And I think that this shows you the mentality of some of the liberals who want to disarm the American people. Anybody would advocate that. I would never want them to be able to control my life and my future. I would want a gun to protect myself from the likes of the man writing this article.
That's exactly right. Not merely implicit, but there's overt violence in the rhetoric of the left here, because they all start from the proposition that our lives are theirs to control. And because those of us who prefer to be at least largely autonomous in the way that we conduct our lives, who subscribe to the non-aggression principle or some version of it, understand that at some point, if these people insist on controlling our lives, we're going to rebel, which is why, of course, those who presume to dictate how the rest of us will live want us to be made as disarmed and as manipulable, as manageable, as the Plains Indians were after the last great gun turn-in that was conducted by the U.S. military in the history of the United States, and that was at Wounded Knee in December of 1890. At the Wounded Knee Massacre, where several hundred American Indians were mowed down by a vengeful 7th Cavalry, was a gun turn-in. They were being disarmed. They were starving. They were freezing. Many of them were sick. Chief Bigfoot was probably dying at that point from pneumonia before he got shot and left to freeze on the steps there at Wounded Knee. But this is all being done as part of a gun turn-in program of the sort that would have to take place if people of this ilk, Mr. Call's ilk, are serious about gathering up the firearms that would be prescribed by these new gun control measures.
But I think that anybody who would write that, you know, talking about, you know, taking a Senate leaders and dragging them around behind the back of a car, what sort of mentality, what sort of morality is that?
That's exactly what you expect from the revolutionary left. They're exterminationist in their outlook. If they can't control us, they want to liquidate us. That simple.
And I think that basically people have to understand America is great because we limited the power of government, but we can disagree. They do not want disagreement. They don't care what the majority of the people want. They have an agenda. And they want to control our lives from the cradle to the grave. And especially, ladies and gentlemen, I think these people are dangerous and they should be arrested as subversive because that's just what they are.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
William, you go right ahead.
When you're talking about the intentions of people of this ilk, it's useful to refer to something that Dianne Feinstein said way back in 1995, after the so-called assault weapons ban was passed. By the way, the difference between an assault weapon under that measure and under the measures being discussed today and a weapon that would not be prohibited by law is purely cosmetic. An assault weapon becomes perfectly legal if you simply strip it of a few extraneous features. And an assault weapon, quite frankly, could be any weapon that the government doesn't like, whether you're talking about aesthetic qualities or properties that have to do with the way it performs. There's really no net benefit to public safety from banning these weapons. They would be banned, of course. They'd still be in the hands of the most dangerous element of society, which is the police and the military. In every society, our own very much included, most of the killing that is carried out by government and specifically by those elements of government. What Dianne Feinstein said in 1995 was the following. If I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, meaning so-called assault weapons, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it. Now, she wasn't able to do that back in 1994, 1995. And they're most likely not going to be able to do that right now, but what they can do is to start using other ways of trying to extract guns from the hands of people using economic and social pressure. Ms. Feinstein's current measure would require that guns be essentially rented from the government. You'd be able to own your gun, but you'd have to pay an annual fee on it. And then at the end of your life, once you die, you would not be able to turn them over to another party, whether you're talking about an heir or a relative or a friend. The government would forfeit the guns from you. You would not be able to pass them on. And so what they're doing there is they're creating the idea that these firearms are somehow the collective property of the government rather than the individually held property of the law-abiding person who bought them. That's a very important distinction to make here, and there's a reason why they're doing that. It's because once they've laid the predicate here for treating firearms as the collective or communal property of the government, they can do that with assault, so-called assault weapons. They can do that with any firearm, but of course most...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is William Grigg. He's talking about one of the things they're talking about. And it certainly is that you would have to pay a fee. You'd have to register your weapons, your assault weapons, and then you'd have to pay an annual fee on it. And then when you died, you would not be able to pass this on to a relative or a friend, or it could not be sold. The government would collect it. To register with the government would now collect it. Where do they get off this, ladies and gentlemen? They want to disarm the American people because there are people who want a dictatorship in America. It's just that simple. There's a subversive element that wants to destroy freedom as we have known it, and they realize that the key to all of this is disarming the people. I wish it weren't so. I wish we could just live our lives and be left alone, but there really are a small number of people who take us from war to war, to war, to crisis, to crisis, to crisis. They create all sorts of artificial conflicts, and if you've never studied what happened at Waco, why you need to see the video, Waco, A New Revelation, where two actually members of the Special Forces talk about the Special Forces team that came in and killed 20 members of the Davidians by shooting them in the back of the head. And then we were told, well, they all committed suicide. And oh, those poor little children, 17 little children, they were all, they all suffocated in the silo. No, ladies and gentlemen, they didn't suffocate. They were blown up when the Special Forces team dropped explosives into the silo and blew up the women and children, helpless women and children. And so was the Delta team there, because we know very well that the Oklahoma City bombing, Timothy McVeigh had told both his sister and David Hammer, who was in prison with him, and his associate, Terry Nichols, told them all the same thing. I'm working for a special forces unit involved in illegal activity, and that information totally suppressed. They had video cameras, certainly, that recorded everything that happened. And all those video cameras and all the film footage was suppressed for 10 years. And when finally it was released, they cut out everything that told the truth about what really happened at Oklahoma City. And the same thing is taking place as far as Sandy Hook. We know that this was contrived. How do we know? Because they're suppressing the video footage. Ladies and gentlemen, all they have to do is release the video footage from what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School. And we could see the shooting. We would know there were no other shooters there. But they won't do that. Have you noticed that nobody talks about the video footage at Sandy Hook Elementary School? Rush Limbaugh doesn't talk about it. Sean Hannity doesn't talk about it. All those conservative patriots don't talk about it. I wonder why. Go right ahead, William.
Not only are they suppressing the footage, you point out, and there has to be video, surveillance video available, because every school of any size in this country has got surveillance cameras. That's true, as I mentioned last week. The schools here in Payette, Idaho. Payette is a community of about 7,000 people. We don't have any elite private or quasi-private or high-profile school of the sort that we're talking about. The Sandy Hook Elementary is not a private school, I don't think, but it was certainly a model school, very recently constructed school. It certainly had surveillance cameras of the sort that are present at the elementary school and the junior high school where my kids attend school. So not only are they making sure that the public doesn't have access to the video footage, but the very first thing that, almost the first thing, one of the first things that the police did was to threaten with arrest anybody who was accused of propagating what the police would call misinformation about this event on social networks such as Facebook or Twitter. In other words, what they're saying is that if you are promoting a viewpoint, if you're reporting on this from a perspective that doesn't comport with the official line, then they're willing to criminalize this. And so information management is the very, very highest priority here, not determining what happened and certainly not informing the public about what happened. It's the control of information. As you point out, Dr. Stan, that fits very seamlessly with what happened in places like Ruby Ridge and Waco and with Oklahoma City and other episodes of that sort, where evidence that could confirm the claims that the government made regarding these contested incidents was made inaccessible and often destroyed. One case in point would be the front door at the sanctuary there at Mount Carmel outside Waco. The official story was that for some reason, when the ATF agents decanted themselves from the vehicles or climbed off a flatbed truck and laid siege to that church in what was a completely criminal assault to exercise a completely defective and unreliable warrant, that for some reason David Koresh went out. The first thing he did that is admitted by all parties was he held up his hands and tried to calm the raiders, trying to call them off and say, look, if you want to find out what's going on, just ask. In other words, even at that point, he was trying to be conciliatory. But the story is that he came out and told them to back off, told them to stand down, and then he went back inside the building, shut the door, and then fired out through a closed door at the ATF agents. And there's a scene in a horribly, brazenly propagandistic made-for-TV movie that was in production while the siege was going on. This is in 1993, bear in mind. While the siege was going on, the 51-day siege of the Branch Davidians at Waco was going on, NBC was doing an instant coffee caliber made-for-TV movie starring Tim Daly as David Koresh. And in the opening scene of that docudrama. You actually had a bit where they show the Branch Davidians lining up behind a closed door, facing out through a closed door, firing blind at the ATF agents. And the official story that they gave was that they had been shot, but the Branch Davidians shot first, and in order to do this, they'd have to fire through a closed door. If that was the case, then they could have recovered the door, which was made of a material that would have survived the fire, and they could have presented it for inspection. They could have verified that there were exit holes going through the side of the door that would have been fired on by the Davidians, but that door disappeared, as did pretty much every other bit of evidence that would have substantiated their story. But that's typical of what we're talking about here. These are people who are by no means constrained by respect for the truth. But you made a point a couple of minutes ago, Dr. Stan, where you asked, where do ideas like the proposal from Senator Feinstein about treating firearms as if we rent them for the government, where do ideas like that come from? They come from, among other places, a group called IANSA, I-A-N-S-A. That's a group which has taken on several different guises in recent years. The acronym stands for the International Action Network on Small Arms. And IANSA, in whatever institutional guise it's operating today, was the UN-generated non-governmental organization that wrote the Small Arms Treaty back in 2001 that the Obama administration has indicated it will sign. Last summer, during the last few weeks of the election campaign, Mr. Obama made a point of shying away from endorsing that treaty when it was being discussed at the United Nations. Immediately after his reelection, practically the first thing he did is he said, oh, I'd be willing to sign that treaty now. And so any of the proposals for civilian disarmament, let us not call these ideas gun control. Let us not dignify them by using the euphemistic language or the self-serving descriptions that the people who are advocating them would have us employ. All these civilian disarmament initiatives would be in some way harmonious with what the United Nations is promoting internationally. This is a principle they call harmonization. We would make our domestic laws compatible with the international guidelines of the United Nations. And from the United Nations perspective, there is no legal right for civilians to own firearms, certainly not for self-defense. And most importantly, not for the defense of populations against the aggression by their governments. Remember, the United Nations is an assembly of governments. It doesn't represent the peoples of the world, as it says in the preamble to the United Nations Charter. It talks about we, the peoples of the United Nations. The peoples are not represented there. The ruling elites of the world are represented in the United Nations. And to be more specific, the dominant elites are still from the Anglo-American consortium, the United States and Great Britain, and whatever powers can be browbeaten or bribed into supporting the Anglo-American condominium. It might change in the near future. I mean, the BRIC nations, that's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, probably have preponderant economic influence now owing to the profligacy and stupidity of Washington. And China, of course, being large and vast and having been made prosperous through the stupidity and treasonous actions of our government, China is becoming probably the dominant player in the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. So maybe within the next decade or two, they'll eclipse the United States and Great Britain. But for now, the Anglo-American Alliance, which of course is the seedbed of all these subversive organizations we talk about, the Brotherhood of Darkness, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Roundtable Groups, all these things, of course, grow out of this Anglo-Alliance, Anglo-American entente. They're the ones who control the Security Council. They're the ones who control the banking elements, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund. And they're the ones who finance groups like IANSA.
And I think it's important that people understand we have our troops stationed in nations not to defend them, but to control them. We have 45,000 troops stationed in Germany today. Why would we have 45,000 troops there? We have 11,000 troops in England. Who are we defending England from? We have 11,000 troops in Italy. We have certainly 35,000 troops in Japan, 25,000 troops stationed in Korea. We are occupying those countries, and nobody wants to say that. We have occupation forces all throughout the world, according to Ron Paul. We have about 900 foreign military bases, some large, some small, but we have almost 900 foreign military bases and troops stationed in about 130 nations. Now, maybe they're not all, you know, of 30 or 40,000 troops,
yeah.
But remember, we are occupying both Germany and Japan, and those countries pretty well do exactly what they are told to do. But there is growing opposition, and certainly China and India and Indonesia and other countries are setting up their own trade blocs and excluding the United States. And everything is changing and changing rapidly. Go right ahead.
It's changing, and it has to change, because at some point, as we mentioned in the first segment of our discussion, I talked to Stan, the Central Bank of the United States simply runs out of tools it can use in order to prolong the charade here of economic prosperity. And so when the economic vitality of the United States becomes depleted to the point that we're eclipsed by China or some consortium of other powers, then the power that the United States government exercises in these multilateral forums will be diminished as well. That's why they start talking about a multipolar world. We've lived in a unipolar system now since the notional end of the Cold War in 1991, and we're reaching a point now where the United States is probably going to step back into the chorus rather than being out in front of it with the director's baton. And a lot of people believe that Mr. Obama was selected for his current role because of his background as somebody who promoted a type of post-colonial ideology where he believed that the United States should have a less prominent role in global affairs. I don't know whether I believe that or not, because he's certainly not diffident when it comes to exercising the type of imperial power that Mr. Bush did before him. I mean, he's, once again, the person who's flinging missiles from remote-controlled drones in at least a half a dozen countries worldwide, and he commits a Sandy Hook-style massacre at least once a week, probably more than that. By that, I mean the massacre of dozens of children in drone strikes that are conducted on his supposed authority, and nobody at the triumphalist left will challenge him about that.
And nobody ever talks about all those innocent little children over there in Syria have been killed. We've killed 60,000 people over there. We've killed 60,000 innocent civilians in this civil war that we're financing over there. It's not a civil war. We're bringing in outside fighters. These are not Syrians. Most of them are coming from Libya, from Tunisia. They're coming from Saudi Arabia. They're coming from Egypt. We're paying them to be there. We're training them. We're providing the weapons. And we've killed 60,000 civilians, many of them children. Why don't we talk about those innocent little children? Are we concerned about those children? And what about the 2,000 or more children who are aborted every single day, who will never have its opportunity to see the sun or laugh or know happiness? What about them? And, of course, we never talk about them. If we did this, talked about them day after day after day, like we talk about the children from Sandy Hook Elementary School, why, of course, we could focus the attention on the people on this terrible thing that's taking place over there in the Middle East today, where the revolution that we are financing in Syria has laid waste to large parts of Damascus and killed over 60,000 civilians, and certainly they're probably close to 750,000 refugees, maybe closing to a million before very long. A million people, refugees over there. And of course, it's cold over there. It's wintertime over there. Who is concerned about the refugees, the Syrian refugees? Are they less human than we are? Oh, well, before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can get to read the articles that you write, how they can see your articles there on Lou Rockwell, how they can find your PayPal button, and hopefully many of our listeners will want to help you and support you.
I appreciate that, Dr. Stan. My main outlet is still my blog, which is called Pro Libertate. It's spelled P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E, P-R-O-L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E. Pro-Libertate, Pro-Libertate. You can go to Google or any other search engine and type in Pro-Libertate, or type in my name, William Grigg, and chances are the blog will be the first return. William Grigg, or William N, N as in Norman Grigg. Just go to a search engine, type that in. The direct address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. You mentioned, Dr. Stan, there is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay that people can use if they have access to PayPal and want to contribute in order to help me provide for my family. And I really do appreciate all the help that we've received. It's been very much a blessing in my life and the life of our family. The current essay at Pro Libertate is about Gerald Nadler, who's the unspeakably vile congressman from New York, who recently said that we ought to disarm the public because in any properly constituted nation state, the government has a monopoly on legitimate use of violence. That's Lenin's definition of government. That's not Madison's definition or Jefferson's definition. And that really is the core of this discussion now about civilian disarmament. The reason why they want to disarm us is not to make us safer, is to make them safer, is to provide them with this monopoly on the use of force that is the hallmark of every dictatorship, and it is the overture to every act of politicide or democide. Democide, of course, is the mass murder of people by the governments who rule them. That's something, once again, that can be found in my blog, Pro Libertate. It's also been republished at lewrockwell.com. That's L-E-W Rockwell, as in Norman Rockwell. L-E-W Rockwell.com. I have most of my articles republished there. There are links back to my blog from the articles that are published at lewrockwell.com. I also contribute regularly to the blog section of that website, which is found on the right-hand side of the screen, lewrockwell.com.
And, of course, William also does write the Radio Liberty newsletter that comes out on a monthly basis, and we just got the latest one. We'll be getting that out, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. Our guest has been William Creek. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program at Radio Liberty. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program for us.
Dr. Stan, thank you very much. I think it's worth quoting, at least as far as I can, a remarkable essay that was published in Pravda on December 28th by Stanislav Mishin. Pravda is no longer the Pravda that your fathers and grandfathers were at least somewhat familiar with. It was the organ of the Communist Party, the newspaper of the Communist Party until 1991. It's published now by a different Communist Party, but it has a wider variety of contributors, one of whom, Stanislav Mishin, is like the Russian Pat Buchanan. He's an anti-communist of a very, very ferocious variety. He's also a nationalist in the same sense that Mr. Buchanan is. And in his most recent essay, Mr. Mishin wrote a warning to America not to allow our government to disarm us. What he explained is that disarming the population is about power, about total power over the people. So do not be fooled by a belief that progressives or leftists hate guns. Oh, no, they do not. What they hate is guns in the hands of those who are not marching in lockstep with their ideology. They hate guns in the hands of those who think for themselves and do not obey without question. They hate guns in the hands of those whom they have slated for a barrel to the back of the ear. That's a warning from Pravda. That's a warning from a Russian patriot, an anti-communist Russian patriot, who looks with alarm at what's happening in our country and with a sense of dreadful familiarity, because he grew up in a country that was very much dominated by the same type of militant collectivist progressivism that has taken hold of our country under Barack Obama. Granted, not uniquely under Barack Obama. He, once again, is more of a disciple of the same type of corporatism that Mr. Bush represented and other Republicans have promoted, then he's an antagonist toward that school of thought. But what has happened now is that the left wing of that dyad is now in power. They're animated by these ideas that are instantly recognizable to people who lived under totalitarian rule in Russia. And the key, of course, to the execution of all those malign designs is to disarm us. We must not let that happen.
Yes, I read that essay, and I thought really how amazing it is to find somebody in Russia who is so concerned about disarmament of the American people, because he realizes that disarmament of the American people is the first stepping stone towards a totalitarian state in America. And even though he's a Russian, he still has a respect for America and wants us to remain free. I wonder how many Americans really feel as strongly as he does.
I know. Exactly.
Well, I'm going to have to let you go. We're out of time. Good night. God bless. We'll talk to you real soon.
God bless you, Doc.
Bye-bye. Well, that's Dr. Stan here, and I hope you enjoy our conversations with William Grigg. I always enjoy them. I think William is one of the most articulate spokesmen for our cause, that we have today. And I feel it's a privilege to have him writing our newsletter and also, of course, to have him as a regular guest every week. And he's doing some other programs for us, for some of our advertisers, having to do with the courts and the corruption in the courts in America today. Well, certainly this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. If you're in a position to help us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a few advertisers. If you'd like to advertise with us, we'd like to welcome you. If you'd like to get our various products that we produce, the videos, the DVDs, the 4-CD sets, we sell a number of books. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you'd like to get a case of them, you can get them at a fraction of the cost. And then you can give them out, or you can hand them out, or you can sell them, whatever you want to do. But we want people to read the book. Somewhere between 50,000 and 100,000 copies are out there. And they are having an impact. And I will tell you that I've had a number of very influential people in the conservative movement tell me that that book has changed their whole outlook on what's going on, because of course we point out that we're not involved in a political or ideological battle, as many people believe. We're involved in a spiritual battle, and there are people who are actively involved in the spiritual battle who know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know, because they've infiltrated our churches, our seminaries, and our ministers will not speak out. When was the last time you heard an American minister or American Christian leader talk against the use of torture on the part of the American forces? We tortured at least 3 or 4 people to death over there in Iraq. Suddenly, when we went in, we tortured them to death. Whoever was charged, convicted on those, they weren't the people who tortured them to death said, we didn't intend for them to die. They just died while we were torturing them. And these were innocent people, a general in the Iraqi army. They tortured to death. How do you think the Iraqis feel? How do you feel about a government that would allow that sort of thing? If you haven't read General Taguba's report, we do have it. You can get it off the internet. Major General Taguba was asked to evaluate what went on at Abu Ghraib prison and the torture there. And he was told, if he told that didn't tell the truth, if he whitewashed it, he'd get another star. But Major General Taguba was an honest man, unlike so many people in our military who will compromise for advancement. Major General Taguba told the truth about Abu Ghraib, and he was called by the assistant of the military, U.S. Army, and told him to resign his commission, which he did, but he resigned with honor. I wonder how many other generals can make that statement. I know some who can. If you haven't heard my DVD, it's called A Marine General Speaks, my interview with a four-star Marine General, Lew Walt. Amazing. We have, of course, a number of interviews with Lew Walt. Became a very close friend before he died. But A Marine General Speaks, you'll want to get that DVD. You'll want to get our talk. It's called The World Revolution. We'll actually hear my interview with Earl T. Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution. And Ambassador Smith certainly tells us that he knew Fidel Castro. He knew Fidel Castro was a communist. The president knew he was a communist. The State Department knew Fidel Castro was a communist. Fidel Castro didn't win the Cuban Revolution. He didn't have the support of the Cuban people. He was installed by the American State Department that knew he was a communist. You really want to hear that? Because when you understand that, you can understand why David Rockefeller's daughters go down regularly to visit Fidel, and why Fidel comes up to visit David Rockefeller. You verify that in David Rockefeller's memoirs. You can get them all at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we were involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and we're losing that battle because nobody understands it.
God bless America.
to the Power Hour Radio Show. Thank you for joining us. It is the 4th of January, 2012. 13! Oops! Knew it. That's right. Friday, January 4th, 2013. Josh is here with me. Sounds strange, doesn't it, Josh?
Good morning. Yes, it does.
Especially since we thought we'd never be here. You know, we never thought we'd make it this long.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, when I was younger, I didn't.
Yeah, really?
I didn't think I'd make it this far.
Well, we all made it. We're here today to join together to learn more about what's going on in the world and hopefully to bring the world together just a little bit. It's all about binding us together with the truth. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that feel so alone now and so disenfranchised from the average McDonald-eating, pizza-loving, movie-going person.
I think the gap is growing wider between, you know, the two sets of